Thanks for being with us as we are live across the nation, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. in the East. I'm Michael Jenkins. She is Chelsea Messenger. Coming up, plenty of Monday Night Football to talk about. Jets and Dolphins in Miami, Bengals and the Broncos on a beatdown in the Mile High City. Then the battle between the Jags and 49ers spills into the postgame handshakes. That story comes your way in 20 minutes. And we'll decide which takes we like and which ones we don't coming up at 6:40. Chelsea, how you doing?
Yeah, good morning. Let's see how I sound, because I'm pretty sick today.
Oh, no. So
I apologize if my voice sounds terrible, and maybe we will not be getting the long monologues today. So keep that in mind. I'm doing my best.
What's going on? Mono? Mononucleosis? Like Sam Darnold back in the day?
No, I think I just have a head cold. So it's one of those things where you like sound worse, it's worse in the morning. So you know how it is when you do a morning show. It's like, great. The time that I need to be the sharpest is the time when I feel the worst. So,
I get that. Well, good on you. That's what people say about you. You're a gamer. She's a gamer. When it's time,
people
you're not going to just be,
gamer.
Absolutely. You're not going to be sitting out like, oh, Chelsea's a little hurt today. No, you're in the game. You're going to play. You're not going to be like, hey, guys, I can't go today. When the team needs you, you're there.
I will say on a very serious note, I think I have the best attendance record of anybody on the network. I'm not even kidding. I think both of us do. We don't miss a ton of days, and especially during football season, so we are pushing through this, and I know I don't sound the best, but I am here.
You always find it, why is my phone open right now? You know how that happens. I mean,
open?
Like, you know, well, I don't mean, like, all of a sudden, Gemini pops on, like, hey, were you talking to me? Nah, I was just listening to your conversation, that's all. Just I'll have
as
like
always.
Cold. Yeah, I'll have cold remedies pop up. Head cold remedies later on this morning. The phone's always listening. Well, I hope you get to feeling better. And I know Justin Fields didn't make you feel great last night.
Well, I was all over it. I just picked the wrong side of attempts as opposed to yards. So I thought that Justin Fields would have a big day on the ground last night against the Dolphins. He did, but he did not get his attempts prop for me. So set at 8.5. I did this just in case he didn't get a ton of yards. He had 71 yards rushing, had a rushing touchdown, but only had 7 attempts. Time kind of ran out, and it felt like the game script was not quite as positive as I was expecting, because the Jets were playing from behind most of the night. So that was an L for me. But Jenks, an easy winner for you.
Yeah, it started off slow, and I thought, this isn't going to end well for this guy. But got some points in the second half, had Jets Dolphins over 44 and a hook. So 48 points last night with the Dolphins winning 27-21. Dongster was laying the 2.5 with Miami. That was a winner. So it's early, as it is here on a Tuesday, and you're 0-1. I'm 1-0. The Dongster is also 1-0. It is the Daily Tip here on the BetMGM Network. It is great to have you with us. If you're feeling great, if you're trying to decide, I don't know if I want to go to work today, you know what? You can take us to work, or you can lay in bed, listen to us at home. Whatever it takes, as long as we can win you some money and hopefully entertain you over the next 3 hours. And we were pretty entertained last night on Monday Night Football. Got a good game. Dolphins downing the Jets 27-21. The Dolphins laying 2.5. They were -150 on the money line, and again, the over hits. Tua Tagovailoa, 177 yards, 2 touchdowns, both to his tight end.
You take it to Gordon, Tua on the move, and flips into the end zone for a touchdown. The second time, it's Darren Waller.
The great Chris Fowler on ESPN. Waller, 3 catches, 27 yards in his first NFL game in 2 full seasons. Dolphins on top, 17-3 in the third. Jets will within a score when Justin Fields takes off on a 43-yard touchdown run, but the Fins answer right back.
Fields, Achan, eludes a tackler, and scores! Miami does answer!
20 carries for 99 yards and that touchdown for Achan. Tua moves to 7-0 against the Jets as Miami's starter. Dolphins win their 10th straight against the Jets in Miami. But the big story that we'll be following today is that the Dolphins will very likely be without Tyreek Hill for the rest of the season. Dislocates his knee in the third quarter. Had to be carted off the field, taken to the hospital. Tough to watch, but at the very least, he was in good spirits. Dolphins really needed this one.
Oh, absolutely. Somebody needed to win this game, and at least the Dolphins got one at home. And I think from a betting standpoint, we saw this line, we thought to ourselves, how are the Dolphins favored? They looked absolutely, their offense came to play, and maybe it had something to do with this Jets defense not being nearly as stout as we thought it was going to be. But to me, the story of this game was the penalties. And the Jets had some really costly ones, including an offensive pass interference call that took back a touchdown. And it feels like the game could have kind of swung on that play. Jets finish needs to win this badly against anybody. You are not good enough to overcome those flaws, because the Jets had 404 yards of total offense. They still lost the game.
Yeah, when you're a team like the Jets, the one thing you can't do is, look, this is a bad football team. This is not a good football team. Part of the problem is they were really one-dimensional last night. Like, Justin Fields is just kind of running around trying to make something happen, and he can certainly do that. Like, he can throw and he can pass, but the Jets sort of seem discombobulated, and when you're turning the football over and when you're racking up penalty after penalty after penalty and you're playing sloppy football, and again, you don't have the talent to match up with other teams, you're just not going to win many games. And as we were talking about, going back over recent history, the Jets just don't win in Miami anyway. I don't know if it's the fact that the Jets have been so bad for so long. That's probably a lot of it. Part of it is the weather as well. But you can't go into a game like this against a desperate team and be that sloppy on both sides of the football.
Yeah, absolutely not. You just cannot afford it. Meanwhile, on the Dolphins side of things, I thought Tua looked much more confident in this game. We even saw him scrambling a bit, which I think is a departure from what we've seen, because obviously with somebody with that many head injuries, you probably don't want him rushing the football too much. But he picked out some, you know, nice first downs, even got a penalty called on him when somebody did hit him in the head. And you're like, oh no, oh no. Tua, why aren't you wearing a Guardian cap? It feels like it was made specifically for you, but you're not wearing it. But Tua did look better in the pocket. Like, I'm not saying he's going to be in the MVP race this year. I am saying he did look more confident, at least last night, as far as making his reads and making some of these throws.
Man, I'll tell you, what a blow to this Dolphins team and to their offense with Tyreek Hill done for the season. I mean, it's only a matter of time. He's going to have an MRI, he's going to have a CT scan, and they're going to check him out. But it would be stunning if we saw him again this year. And so for an offense that hasn't really quite been the juggernaut that it was a couple years ago, if you're Mike McDaniel, you got to be like, you got to be kidding me. Like, we finally get a dub and we lose Tyreek for the rest of the season. I'm glad he seemed to be joking around with teammates and seemed to be taking it in stride, because that's hard to do. And you saw both teams on each sideline sort of react to that injury. It did not look good. So you knew he was going to be done. But ultimately, if you're talking about production here, this is a big blow to Miami despite the win.
Well, yeah, when you only have one win on the
season. Yeah.
Season, you probably have. And even from a long-term perspective, think about, you know, he could have been trade bait, and he could have been somebody that you could have gotten pieces to build on for the future, and now that is something that is just a distant memory. So in all aspects, this is a terrible injury for the Dolphins.
Yeah, we kept hearing, too, that maybe he was going to go to the Chiefs. We heard that for the past few weeks, right? The Chiefs, well, they looked really good last week. They got Xavier Worthy back. Rashee Rice is returning after week six. But we thought, okay, in the interim, will they go back to Tyreek Hill to sort of boost that core until they get it full strength? Maybe they can get him at a more discounted price. He's trying out for Kansas City, and all that came to an end last night. As for the Jets, they are still searching for a dub under Aaron Glenn. He drops to 0-4 as the Jets head coach. Jets host the Cowboys on Sunday. The Dolphins visit Carolina. Elsewhere, in the other game on Monday night, the Broncos all over the Bengals, 28-3. Broncos were laying 7.5. Saw a little bit of buyback on the Bengals before the game because that number was sitting at 7.5. Doesn't matter. Broncos also -400 on the money line, and the under hits. Total set at 44.5. Bo Nix, a nice evening in the Mile High City.
Nix wants it on the ground. Touchdown, Denver.
Call courtesy of ESPN and Joe Buck doing the play-by-play. So then the Denver quarterback, after doing it on the ground, takes to the air.
On third down and two, Nix end zone, Sutton, he's got it!
Nix, 326 yards in the air, two touchdowns. That makes it 21-3 Broncos. J.K. Dobbins on the ground, 101 yards. The Bengals just never get close in this game. They got a field goal on their opening drive. After that, eight straight punts. Gah. Jake Browning, 14 of 25, 125 yards. The Bengals with just 159 yards of total offense. They convert two third downs on the evening. I mean, the Bengals look terrible. They have to do something with Jake Browning. That offense is just dead on arrival.
Well, it starts with the offensive line, because the offensive line, as Joe Burrow has been so good at negating it, and he's been so crafty, Jake Browning is not the same deal. Like, it's a lot to put on his plate. And plus, this is one of the toughest matchups defensively for a team that relies heavily on wide receivers. Because think about the secondary for the Broncos on paper, at least. Pat Surtain is second, reigning NFL Defensive Player of the Year. So when you have guys that are getting covered like white on rice, and your quarterback is running for his life, it's just not a good combination. Because it's not a matter of T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase not being talented. It's just that Jake Browning can't get the ball to him.
Yeah, I know the line is bad. I feel like they got to do something with him, though. They got to bring someone in who can maybe sort of mitigate the issues on the O-line and just complete some passes. It's really difficult against the Broncos. You're not wrong about that. Jaquan McMillan was asked about the plan to stop Ja'Marr Chase last night. He was asked this after the game. He said the plan was Patrick Surtain. That was the plan. Just stick him on Ja'Marr and shut him down. And it worked. Chase had 23 yards receiving. But Jake Browning, now going back to last week against the Vikings when he was awful, has just been really bad. So they need some sort of spark on offense. And here's the thing. The Bengals are sitting at 2-2. It's not over yet. They could get Joe Burrow back maybe, what, start of December, I think, is when he's slated to return. They've just got to find a way to get to the postseason and then let Joey Burrow come back and maybe he can work some magic. But they can't have performances like this week in and week out where it's not even close. Like, they were embarrassed by the Vikings last night. That was an offensive abomination. And so, yeah, you're talking about two very good defenses. At the same time, you got to start stacking some dubs, because it's not like Jake Browning is going to go off here over the next few weeks and lead you on some sort of winning streak. You've just got to stack some dubs and get to the postseason, and I don't know if he's the guy to do it.
Yeah, especially when your next game is against the Lions.
Yeah.
And then you get the Packers at Lambeau. Then you have a divisional matchup against the Steelers. Then finally, maybe a respite when you play the Jets. Then it's the Bears and the Steelers again. So, like, the schedule in the short term is not looking super easy.
I'll tell you who's sitting there, down in the dirty, dirty. Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins just waiting for someone to give him a call. Give me a call. I'll be that veteran leader on offense. Nobody's just going to want to take him on. I mean, Double D's more of a Falcons expert than anyone here on the show. But if you trade for him, I mean, my God, that salary is so punitive that you've got to do something or work some sort of new deal or figure something out. You know, I'm definitely no cap expert, but anyone that looks at maybe bringing him in doesn't want to pay that price, so he's just going to sit there, maybe ride the bench. Michael Penix looked good last week, so he's just going to sit there, maybe come in during garbage time. I'm trying to think of someone who would be available for Cincinnati who could come in and just stop the bleeding for a while.
Yeah, but when you have such a bad offensive line, does it really matter? Like, yeah, that's the thing. Like, Joe Burrow was such a Band-Aid for that team that it's just like, okay, you signed Kirk Cousins, who's not exactly fleet of foot, and you're paying him a ton of money to do what? Maybe make the playoffs? This is not a Super Bowl team, because there is a litany of issues on this Bengals team that, again, Joe Burrow was covering up. The defense has all sorts of issues still, so it's just not a good team all around, so it feels like you shouldn't be hedging your future on a team that doesn't look like a good one overall.
I mean, I wouldn't hedge my future on them, and yeah, the O-line is bad, but that just goes to show, like, how much a great quarterback can elevate that offense. Like, that's how good Joe Burrow is. Like, I don't know why, over the years, the Bengals have not invested more in that offensive line, but it just goes to show, even with that terrible offensive line, guess who makes the Cincinnati offense look great? An all-world quarterback like Joe Burrow. So, certainly a guy like Jake Browning, who has mixed results anyway, like, he's not going to elevate that offensive line and that offense. So bring in someone who obviously is not going to be Joe Burrow, but someone who can come in and at least move the chains for a little while and keep you guys competitive to get you close to the postseason. Because the last thing Cincinnati needs after going through, okay, we're going to play in the preseason, we're going to play in the preseason, we're going to get off to a fast start. What happens? Joey B gets injured and you're off to a slow start again. So there's still time, but they got to do something. Coming up next year on the show, why worry about the next Jake Paul fight when we've got Liam Cohen and Robert Saleh? That is coming up next on The Daily Tip on the BetMGM Network. Tuesday, the Daily Tip on a BetMGM Network. She's Chelsea Messenger. I'm Michael Jenkins. Getting you through the week here. Coming up on the show, Jags head coach Liam Cohen has something to say besides Duval. Finally, something fiery at the Jags head coach. We'll get into that as he got into it with Robert Saleh after Sunday's game. Chelsea, when is the last time you accidentally called someone? I did that yesterday morning. It ended up being kind of funny, but I was on the way to work, and it was 5:45 in the morning, and I got an email from the Commanders regarding our rundown for the pod later on that day. And so it was addressed to me and Smoot, who's my podcast partner, Fred Smoot. And so I was like, oh, wait, I think I have the wrong email address for Smoot. So I clicked on his email and somehow clicked on his contact information, and it called him. I was like, oh, shoot. I gotta hang up real quick. Lasted like, I don't know, like it was like a maybe a second call. And this is early. And so I didn't think too much about it. I'm like, all right, he probably didn't even get the call. I hung up immediately. But then at 7:30, while I'm doing the show, during the show, I look down, my phone's ringing. And it was Smoot. And I was like, oh, man, I feel so bad. So I texted him. I was like, hey, that's on me. Sorry, I accidentally hit your number. And the text I get back is, I was coming to bail you out. I was like, well, knowing Smoot, that's exactly something he would say. But that's a good friend. Like, I thought maybe if you're calling me that early, you're in trouble. So I'm coming to get you. So end up being a good thing. Like, it's good to have someone who has your back. But also, it's an awkward feeling when you call someone accidentally like that.
Especially because phone calls hold so much weight these days. Because yeah. Everybody's like, oh, you called me? Whoa. So this happens to me, like, occasionally because the Bluetooth in our Jeep goes absolutely haywire sometimes. I'm not sure what's wrong with it, mm-hmm. but if your Bluetooth is connected, it'll go to your contacts and just call the first person. Oh, and you're like, God. What? Whoa. So the first person in my contacts, and I feel like I need to delete her just because we haven't talked in like 10 years. So it calls Alana Wojciechowski, who her husband pitched on the Reds with Jake. So the last time we talked was like 2016. So imagine somebody you haven't talked to in 10 years and you're calling them on the phone. This person's probably like, what in the world? Because that's even more awkward because it's like mm-hmm. we haven't communicated in a long time. I have nothing against her. We're friends. It's just out of the blue a phone call. It feels very strange.
Yeah, I get that. Especially now. That's for sure. Like a phone call now just has more weight to it than it used to, you know, because people just text all the time. Alana Wojciechowski, is that right?
Wojciechowski.
And
now they live in Croatia. So I don't know if she's getting my phone calls. So... Hopefully she's not paying money for them.
I'll tell you who's not going to be calling each other. Liam Cohen and Robert Saleh. No phone call between those two guys. I missed this on Sunday when the Jags took on the Niners out west. Jags won that game 26-21. So this goes back to last week. They kind of got into it after the game. But to set the stage here, so Robert Saleh was suggesting that the Jags were stealing signs. So he said this during a press conference. They've got, legally, a really advanced signal-stealing type of system where they always find a way to put themselves in an advantageous situation. They do a great job with it. So I didn't think there was too much there. That is kind of part of the game, like looking at different coverages, different schemes, motion, whatever it is, and saying, oh, this is what this team is going to run. Well, Liam Cohen did not appreciate that. So after the game, he sort of walked up to Saleh, sort of, because Robert Saleh is a large individual and much bigger than Liam Cohen, and yelled, keep my name out of your effing mouth. And so Saleh responds, I will F your world up. And immediately after Liam Cohen said this, like one of his big boys, like one of his offensive linemen, like whisked him away. Like, stay back, coach. He doesn't want any of this. He doesn't want any of this smoke. And so they refused to answer those questions after the game. Liam Cohen did. Robert Saleh will speak on Thursday for the Niners. What did you think of this interaction when you saw it? I saw Liam Cohen yell something and then run away.
I think this is actually good and in the favor of Liam Cohen. Because mm-hmm. for somebody who kind of needs a PR rehab, Liam Cohen says, that weird quote that he had when he first got to the Jags, Duval, where he seemed really creepy and really weird. Yeah. So I think this is, you know, a check in his, you know, favor to where people start to respect him. And I understand, like, but, like, if it's so if it's so easy, then why isn't Robert Saleh doing it? Why aren't the Niners doing it, right? So if I'm not going to say, like, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. But at the end of the day, I do think this is good for Liam Cohen. And I do think it sets the tone for his team. Because I was listening to a conversation the other day here locally about how former players were talking about how the head coach sets the tone for the team. Mm-hmm. And if your coach is fiery and ready to go head-to-head with other coaches, and I am not condoning fighting, I'm just saying it sets a tone where this is a guy that wants to be here, this is a guy that wants to win, and this is a guy who's willing to go, you know, on the line and takes him away from the situation, you know, who's willing to go to bat for his team.
I mean, I will say Jags players kind of loved it. They wouldn't talk about it too much, but the guys that were around were saying, yeah, hey, whatever it takes, we kind of love the fact that he was fired up. And love the motivation and love the passion. So I remember, I can't repeat this story on the air. It's a very famous one. But if you go back and look at what John Gruden said to his team before they went out in the Super Bowl and smacked around, what, the Raiders? Wasn't he coaching the Bucs at the time? And you have to hear Warren Sapp tell the story. It cannot be repeated on radio. But Warren Sapp said it's the greatest pregame speech he's ever heard, what John Gruden said. It's really crass, but Sapp says as soon as Coach dropped this line right before the Super Bowl, he's never been more fired up to play a football game. And those guys went out and just dominated the Raiders. So that's one example. But you hear examples like that all the time where, look, when Dan Quinn got hit in the face a couple weeks ago against the Raiders, and he popped up and he had blood running down his nose between his eyes. Like, anything that makes you feel like your coach is one of you is something that fires you up. And even the Commanders players said, yeah, our coach popped up. A, we were concerned about him. Then B, we're like, oh my God, this guy stood right back up after getting flattened, blood almost between the eyes, just standing there ready to keep coaching us. It gets the players going.
Yeah, I feel like you're around a lot of former players, so I think mm-hmm. you would probably have a good idea on this. Do you think players like having those type of coaches better than, for a while in the NFL, it felt mm-hmm. like we were getting a lot of, like, I don't want to call them, like, small and nerdy guys, but, like, your Matt LaFleurs, your Sean McVays, your Mike McDaniels, guys that don't look like they would play football, but they're really smart, you know, they're good analytical minds. But it feels like there was a departure from, like, the standard, like, quote-unquote football guy, like the Mike Vrabels of the NFL. Do you think players have a preference?
That's a good question. I think what they want is someone that they feel like they're completely aligned with. And what I mean by that is that can be in a couple of different forms. You just want someone you feel like you can relate to. And when it comes to football, yeah. you can relate to someone who has a passion, right? Who's sort of like a guy's guy, who, like a Dan Campbell, Dan Quinn, is sort of this mold, right? Like, I'm with you. I'm in it with you. I might not be out there, but I might as well be. Like, I have the same passion and the same fire that you do. And then you have other guys that relate in different ways. And this was a story I heard yesterday, which I had not heard, and was about Jim Harbaugh, who doesn't come across as that way. But the story that was relayed to me was, yeah, there's a player on the Chargers, and he was warming up, and getting, like, his ankle taped or something, and Harbaugh walks up to him and is just kind of staring at this guy's ankle getting taped. He's like, hey, if we run this play, do you think you can get a block on the backside? Do you think you can do that? I think it'd work better if you could. And the player's like, yeah, we could do that. And the player was just sort of like, his mind was blown that this guy's walking around while he's getting his ankle taped, and Jim Harbaugh is just so singularly focused on a football play or something football related. Like, I'm trying to find an extra advantage to win this game. I'm trying to find something else we can do to help us win. And so that's not the typical brash, I'm with you, let's go guys, let's break their ankles, but it is someone who's like, maybe I'm not that guy, but I'm a guy who is always thinking football. I'm trying to win games just like you. So however you relate, if you can find a way to sort of find that touchstone with a player in your locker room, I think it's a big deal.
Yeah. I do feel like Jim Harbaugh is definitely a football guy, though. Like, it's not shocking when you tell
me that. He's just not a rah-rah guy,
always,
I feel like. You know what I mean?
But, like,
he's just
always
a weirdo
thinking about football.
Yes.
Like, it does feel like his whole life is football, is what I'm getting at. But at the end of the day, like, the most important thing is nobody will care if you're winning. So, like, mm-hmm. things about, like, Sean McVay, like, maybe he's not the biggest guy, but, like, he is a great coach. So, at the end of the day, like, personalities at the start maybe make a difference, and maybe when you're facing adversity, but at the end of the day, like, winning cures a lot of things.
No, there's no doubt about it. And there's different ways to go about it, right? There's no right way. It's just about finding that connection. And sometimes it's a personal connection. Sometimes it's like, oh, this guy really cares about me. He wants to win like I do, but also he really gives a damn about me. I'm not just some dude on a roster. So there's different ways to go about it. But as long as that passion comes through, then you can find a way to connect with your players. Will A.J. Brown ever connect with his coaches? I don't know. We knew this was coming. When you saw this in the rundown, weren't you like, yeah, it's about time. It's about time we talked about this story. So A.J. Brown, shockingly, not really happy with the Eagles offense right now. Posted a tweet yesterday. It was a Bible verse, and this was about being wanted after the Eagles win over the Bucks. The quote says, "If you're not welcomed, not listened to, quietly withdraw, shrug your shoulders, and be on your way." A.J. Brown, 2 catches, 7 yards during the win. He has 145 yards and a touchdown in 4 games this season. Nick Sirianni addressed it yesterday, said A.J. is very important to this team. I know he wants to contribute, do the things he's capable of doing. He's had a couple of games where he hasn't been able to for different reasons. This was probably the most predictable thing in the NFL. Like, haven't we all been saying for weeks, when is A.J. Brown going to start complaining? And what do you know? Poof, right there in front of us. Here's the complaint.
Well, I mean, this is the guy that was reading a book during, what, the Super Bowl? Or what was it, a playoff game? So yeah. That's the jarring thing, because at the heart of the game of the football, you say to yourself, it is a team sport, and the ultimate goal is to win games. And the Eagles are undefeated. So one would think, why is A.J. Brown so upset? And I have never been a receiver in the NFL, and I understand these guys are super competitive. And I will say that Chad Ochocinco Johnson came to his defense here. Did you see what he said about this? And I'll say this, like, Ochocinco, maybe not the person you want in your corner for being selfless, but he said this, "Do you understand what this does to players mentally? I don't think fans understand. Fans will say, well, we won the game. Yes, you won the game, but these players would love to contribute and help win said games." Do you think there's something to that, Jinx?
I think there is, but also everyone wants to contribute. Like, of course, I get it. Yes, you want to contribute, but everyone wants to contribute. That doesn't make you different from anyone else on the roster. Like, that. This is why receivers have that, you know, have that stereotype of being such divas, because other players generally don't do this. Like, this was my favorite response on Twitter, where someone posted, "Typical QB tweet. Love my teammates. God is good." Mm-hmm. RB tweet. "Keep grinding." Tight end tweet. "Derp." Wide receiver tweet. "The enemy speaks kindly and holds a knife," which is 1,000% true. It's always the receiver. So I understand and appreciate the passion. What I don't understand is this idea that you're the only one who wants to contribute, because that applies to every single person on the roster.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that tweet you just referred to is A.J. Brown's header, if I'm not mistaken. I need to double check, but like, he laughs at that, and he definitely acknowledges that's... But it just feels like, why are you creating unnecessary drama? Like, if mm-hmm. you are a team player, you are allowed to think this, but why do you need to stir the pot publicly? Like, that's where I'm at. Mm-hmm. It's fine to feel these feelings. Like, man, I wish I was more involved. But, like, why are you causing problems for your team? Like, it just does not make sense to me. And it feels like you should be, you know, grateful you're on a good team. Would you rather be catching 10 passes for 101 yards with the Saints? Because mm-hmm. I'm sure that could be arranged. Because, honestly, it feels like that would be worse. Just putting up numbers in no man's land. So, congratulations, A.J. Brown. If you want to go to a bad team, listen, you can come back to the Titans. Post big numbers every day.
Yeah, right. Knock yourself out. You won't have a win in the win column, but your numbers will be amazing. Eagles right now are plus 650 to win the Super Bowl, behind only the Bills at plus 325. And honestly, you can't, like, this is dangerous too, which the Eagles aren't going to do this, but okay, we should run a play here. This, you know, the scheme that we're seeing, or based on the situation, we should probably hand it off here or have Jalen take off. But no, we got to keep A.J. Brown happy. Let's pass the ball here. Like, what, you want to get off script just to keep a receiver happy so he doesn't go online and tweet something? Like, you can't play football that way. Ultimately, you have to understand that your time will come, but that's difficult when you're one of the best receivers in the game. You're not getting your touches. I understand that. But hopefully it'll calm down like it did last year, and the Eagles will be just fine, which right now, they're just fine. Coming up next year on the show. Okay, it's a Take Tuesday, so we're going to bring in D-Day and Double D and find out what is on their minds. She's Chelsea Messenger. I'm Michael Jenkins. This is The Daily Tip on the BetMGM Network. Come on back. It's a Tuesday on The Daily Tip. Welcome back. Thanks for waking up with us. We always appreciate your time. I'm Michael Jenkins. She is Chelsea Messenger. Coming up in 2 minutes. D-Day and Double D have all the takes, but do we agree with them or not? So when we were talking about the Tyreek Hill injury, that's just adding to a long list of injuries in the NFL. CeeDee Lamb, Joe Burrow, Malik Nabers, you can go down the list, and that particularly affects fantasy teams. I don't think you're a big fantasy player. I believe we've talked about this, where you would be more inclined to focus on the gambling aspect as opposed to gambling and fantasy, because a lot of people are in fantasy, and I get that, and I'm not going to tell you about my fantasy teams because, meh, whatever. But it does have a huge effect when these big names are out.
Yeah. Well, and for these teams, obviously, as well. Mm-hmm. But I'm not a big fantasy player for that reason, because imagine you drafted Joe Burrow and Malik Nabers and CeeDee Lamb, and all these guys are just hurt. And so it just feels like your fantasy team just takes a nosedive. So as opposed to doing that, why don't you play props every single week? And these aren't just going to hamstring you for the entire season. It just feels like less of a commitment.
I used to be really into fantasy, and as I've gotten older, I've just kind of faded away. Like, I have two fantasy teams, and I look at them just very, very residually. I'm like, yeah, that guy's out. Okay, whatever. I'll sub this guy in. Like, I keep my roster filled, and I'm sort of on it, but I'm not nearly as hardcore as I used to be. And the guys I used to play with are not as hardcore as they used to be. I don't know if it's just sort of fatigue or just interest moving elsewhere. I still get sort of excited about it, but not like I used to. And I think gambling has a lot to do with that, because I'm more focused on, well, let me handicap instead of spend time like trying to figure out who could be my wide receiver three this week.
Yeah, it feels like fantasy football was like gambling 1.0. Like, before gambling right. was a thing and before we could bet on props, that was the best available option. So that's fine. But now we have fantasy football 2.0, which is simply betting on props and anytime touchdowns. So it feels like, why would you bet on that? Why would you live on America Online 3.0 when you can have AOL 7.0? It just doesn't make sense to me.
Did you see America Online like a month ago officially closed up shop? Did you see that? Finally, after all this time? I thought it was years ago. Yeah, what a run. I had no idea they were still going. That's crazy. And I remember, was it Ted Leonsis who owns, I think so, he owns the Wizards and Capitals, obviously, here in D.C., and was one of the founders, was Steve Case, of America Online. And I believe he sent the first ever, like, private message. And I believe he told this story, I need to double check this, where, you know, he's at work, and then he sends something to his wife, like, hey, can you see this? Which, of course, now you don't think anything about that. Very common, but back in the day, it was like the first ever, like, hey, I'm somewhere here, are you getting this? And she did, and that was sort of the advent of all these messaging, you know, programs and software that we see now. And of course, you can do it on your phone all the time, but, you know, there was a time when he was on the cusp of that, and it was also new and exciting, and that's a really cool story to have.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, this was such a big social component of growing up for my generation. Because, like, think about it. Like, when you don't have a car and you don't have, like, a way to have really a social life, you sit at home and you type on that computer and you talk to people on AOL. And you're like, ooh, my favorite person just got online. It's time to start these skills and try to say something cool and craft a great message. Or do you remember away messages? Like, this was a time to, like, flex your muscle. I'm like, ooh, I'm going to do lowercase, uppercase, lowercase, uppercase, and it's going to look really, really cool.
Wow. They're going to be like, wow, she spent some time on this. What a cool away message that Chelsea left. Back Bay, what was it? Your name on AOL?
963.
Yeah. Bring it back. Bring it back. Back Babe.
For
963. What? 693-963 at gmail.com.
963.
That's your email. 963. Okay. Tell them you bring it back. Well, I don't think Double D, and maybe D, maybe Double D, not D. Denton is too young for this, but Double D, bring on in here. Let's do Take Tuesday.
It's time for Take Tuesday. Are these takes hot?
So hot.
So hot.
Or not?
You can't handle the truth.
Are you too young for AOL Instant Messenger, Double D?
No.
What? Oh, okay.
AOL was the hot thing when I was growing up.
Okay.
It was hot.
Hot.
I still... What gets me nowadays is when people still have their AOL email addresses. Hey, how can I get a hold of you? And they're like, oh, blah, 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 at AOL.com. And I'm like, all right.
If that doesn't work, send it to my Hotmail. Like, oh, wow. You doubled down on that, did you?
It's not. All
right, what do you got for us, buddy?
All right, first one, first take up. Oregon is the best team in college football, and you should run to get your national title ticket on them at plus 600.
Chelsea?
I feel like this is not a hot take because they're the number two team in the country. So, like, I feel like this is a very, you know, logical take because of their big win that they just had on the road in overtime against Penn State. I feel like you look at the rest of their schedule, too, and it lines up so nicely for them. Even their next game, which looks kind of trappy against a good Indiana team, but they get 2 weeks to prepare for it, and that's a home game. Then they have Rutgers, Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota, USC, and Washington on the road, which may be a little tricky, but still, this is a good Oregon team. But they don't even face Ohio State in the regular season. Like, I was looking for them to make the college football playoff. They're minus 1,800. So the odds makers are thinking that they're already in. They're certainly going to have a good chance. But I think more than the national championship bet, I think I like them to finish the regular season undefeated. It's plus 150, not a ton of value there. But the schedule lines up so nicely for them. And this is a really well-coached and great team. So I think any way you slice it, any futures bet on Oregon doesn't feel like a hot take, in my opinion. It feels like a really good one.
Yeah, I'm with you, Double D. It's hard to argue with this take. They're so good on both lines of scrimmage. Like, on the offensive line, on the defensive line. We saw that against Penn State. And I will say that Dante Moore, I didn't know how he was going to be this year after sitting out and sort of waiting his turn last year after coming back to Oregon. But, man, he looked awesome in that game. Dan Lanning's on a Coke run. Good for him. So, they look great right now. I'm not doubting the Ducks, so I would agree with that.
All right, to the NFL we go here. The first fired head coach in the NFL will not be Mike McDaniel. It won't be Brian Daboll. It won't even be Brian Callahan. It will instead be Ravens head coach John Harbaugh.
Nah.
Ooh.
I was looking at the odds yesterday. He's not even in the top 10 of coaches to be fired. I think it's an interesting take that I hear a lot of people saying, but ultimately the Ravens aren't going to let go of a guy who has won a Super Bowl with them, who has taken them deep into the playoffs, not over the hump with Lamar Jackson, and also has lost to Bills, Lions, Chiefs. Now, that could certainly change if we go throughout the season, they start losing games they shouldn't lose. Ravens have a tough road ahead. They're really banged up on defense. I mean, they lost another player or two yesterday for the season. Lamar is not right, so this could be a rough road for them, but I think right now, I would not put any money on John Harbaugh. I think Brian Callahan probably the first guy to go. It looks awful there in Tennessee, which you know.
Oh, absolutely. It has to be Brian Callahan, especially because of the way that the schedule lines up. In week six, the Titans play the Patriots. And do you know who the coach of the Patriots is? Mike Vrabel, who was once the head coach of the Tennessee Titans. If Mike Vrabel and the Patriots put the absolute beatdown on the Titans, which everybody is doing these days, even the lowly Texans, they've got to fire him after that. And I understand, like, midseason firings are a big deal. And that's why I don't think they're going to fire John Harbaugh, you know, midway through the season, especially because the schedule has just been so tough. And they have had so many injuries, and he's won a Super Bowl. So maybe give the guy some credit. So I do think it's Brian Callahan. For a while, I thought maybe it'd be Mike McDaniel. But Brian Callahan is absolutely winless. He is absolutely hapless. He is going back and forth with the media members here when it comes to press conferences. So I feel like he is the favorite for a reason.
All right, back to college football. Vanderbilt is better than they were last year, dominated every game so far, and may have the best offensive line in the SEC. So Vandy is an absolute threat to make the college football playoffs at plus 375.
They're a threat. They are a threat. I just want to see a little more. I want to see them. They have a massive schedule. Like, the heart of their schedule is coming up. Like, they go to Bama. Then it's they host LSU. They host Missouri. They go to Texas. They host Auburn. So right now they look great. Everything's going your way. Clark Lee is a fantastic head coach. Those players just live and die for him. We know how good Pavia is. I think he's trying to play an extra year in college football, which is absolutely insane. So I like Vandy a lot, but I haven't seen enough against these really top-tier teams in the heart of their schedule, which they're about to get into, to put money on them yet.
I think here's the X factor for Vandy. The fact that they have been one of the most penalized teams in the SEC this year. They have been extremely sloppy, and maybe that just shows how good they are. You know, the fact that they can overcome all these penalties. But if you look at their games this season, they've had two games with at least 10 penalties. They've had at least five in every single game. So they've had 7, 11, 5, 10, and 8. With some of those coming for big yardage, 91 yards against Utah State, you cannot play that sloppily and expect to beat some of the best teams in the SEC. So certainly the talent is there, but they need to clean up those penalties.
All right, my final take here. I am not a fan of taunting, but I need the NFL to make an amendment to taunting penalties. I think any defensive back moving forward that celebrates for not actually doing anything should get penalized at least 10 yards. I don't want to see a seatbelt celebration because a quarterback overthrew a guy that beat you. I don't want to see no wave into the crowd because a quarterback overthrew a guy that beat you. If you celebrate for not actually doing anything, you deserve to be penalized.
Oh, these penalties are the worst. There's no question. Which is something that's interesting because the NFL is what? Dropping the hammer this year on unsportsmanlike conduct and celebrating unnecessarily. They focus so much on what you do after a touchdown, I feel like. Or, you know, something that's more offensive as opposed to a defensive celebration. But you see this all the time and they don't do anything. And there's nothing more annoying than a guy who doesn't really contribute to a play and acts like he just won the Super Bowl. So I'm for this.
I don't know how you'd enforce it, though, because I feel like there are multiple guys who do this. And you're like, you are not even on the same side of the field. And also, doesn't it feel like it's a part of, like, the fibers of being for cornerbacks? Like, when I think of, like, cornerbacks, I'm like, oh, that guy's going to be celebrating. If somebody dropped a pass, I just think of that, like, that's their narrative.
Yeah, it is. But also, isn't it kind of out of control? Like, they just keep pushing the envelope. Like, you see a guy on the sideline, like, locking down. Like, dude, you're not even playing. So, I get the frustration. Coming up next, playoff baseball is here. But not before we check out some series prices. Hour 2 is next on The Daily Tip.